Welcome to The Gathering Resources. The following audio is from our breakout session entitled Adoptee Perspectives, Adoption and the Church. This session features Elizabeth Coors and Aaron Blades.
Thanks so much for joining us today at the session about adoptees. This session actually came about through as a product of many conversations and thoughts over the past few years. And we know that adoption is something that's really important to a lot of people at The Gathering. It's important to the church at large, and it's something that's very personal for many of us. Many of our families have adopted or are adoptees. And what we're really hoping to accomplish today is just to bring an adoptee perspective to the conversation. It's often perceived as fairly unbalanced in the sense that adoptee perspectives are missing. And so we wanted to just provoke some conversation and some thinking about that. We're not experts. Elizabeth and I are not experts. We just happen to be adopted. And we also don't try to represent every adoptee opinion and perspective that's out there just because there are so many of them. But we're really glad that you could join us. The way we structured the session is that we're going to share a little bit of our stories, and then we're going to discuss a few topics that we think are particularly important and that we feel like could benefit from more adoptee input. And then we'll have some time for questions as well at the end. So that's the way that we're going to proceed. I would say that for me at least, if Josh had asked me to do this even 3 years ago, I really would not have known what to say or really had any input at all. It was funny, I was talking to Ellen just a few minutes ago, and she and I were talking about this right as I had started thinking about adoption at the gathering, the last in-person gathering in Dallas. And so it's really been the past few years where this has turned into something for me. I was adopted from Korea in the early 80s. I was part of sort of the first big wave of Korean adoptees. My parents are white, and I was adopted into a very small rural town in upstate New York. And I would say that the setting in which I was raised was very insular and in what was generally speaking a positive way. I didn't have to explain my adoption because everybody knew who we were and that I was adopted, which meant that I wasn't confronted with a lot of questions. At the same time, when I was asked questions, I think that my response kind of reflected my attitude towards adoption. People would often ask me, oh, do you wonder who your real parents are? I was like, well, my parents are my parents. What do you mean? And I'd also often get, do you want to go to Korea? And I would be like, why? Like, do you want to go to Korea? Like, why would I want to go to Korea? And so I didn't really get it. It wasn't like a thing for me. And I think that really reflected the fact that to me, adoption was sort of something in the past, more of a trivia fact than something that impacted me in any like meaningful way. Fast forward to 3 or 4 years ago. I have kids. My kids started to get older, and my wife suggested I get a DNA test to just think about being able to inform them a little bit more about their heritage. And that really provoked a lot of reflection. And what I realized is that I think that I had been avoiding conversations about adoption in part because I didn't want to deal with the aftermath of that. There's a term adoptees have, which is called coming out of the fog. And this is a term to describe what was happening to me. Going from sort of this casual indifference toward adoption and sort of this general thinking that it's fairly easy, seamless, and not sort of a big deal, to understanding that it actually is a little bit more complex. There's more trauma involved there than we might expect, and really having to work through that. So that was something that just sort of happened in the past few years. I'd say I've had to face some of the dynamics of being Asian American in Asia, or in America. So being raised in an interracial family in a largely white community, never really feeling like I fit in with my family. I never doubted their love for me, but I never really feel like I fit. Wondering who my biological family was. I had never allowed myself an opening to think about that. And that was something that all of a sudden I kind of gave myself permission to think about. And all of a sudden it became much more of like a thing, for lack of a better term. And so those are just some examples of ways in which it became more complicated for me. And I'll stop there. Elizabeth, can you share some of your story?
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Coors. I am also an adoptee. surprise. I was adopted domestically, and as an infant, I am white, my parents are white, so I did not have to deal with some of the difficulties that many transracial adoptees have to face, which, yay for me, I guess. And my parents are very strong believers. My dad is actually a pastor, so I was raised in the church, and I don't remember a moment when I didn't know about the Lord, which was an enormous gift and blessing that my parents gave me. But part of that is I grew up so entrenched in the church, which is great in so many ways. But one of the side effects of that is growing up completely surrounded about the way the church talks about adoption and all the words that are used. And as I look back, that I realize that really impacted me in a very deep way, that at the time I didn't have the language or the space to think about. So a lot of the language of, wow, adoption is so, it's so cool. That's so hard. Adoptive parents are so brave. And those things are true in many ways, but the way I internalized that as a child, oh, I have my sunglasses. Oh. Sudden realizations. Let me just put them on. One of the ways I really internalized that, and the way I internalized that was like, wow, I must be a burden. If my parents, this is so hard and adoption is so special, I'm different, I guess. And many adoptees deal with that in different ways, but for me, it triggered this very intense desire to perform and to never be an issue. And so I never felt like I had the space to ask questions about my adoption or raise that at all, because I didn't want to rock the boat. I didn't want to cause problems, because due to this language, I was really internalizing already being more difficult than other children just by nature of being adopted, even though I was like so afraid of getting in trouble that I was probably like basically not a problem. And then also surrounded by the classic language that we hear so often of like, wow, earthly, this adoption is a picture of God's adoption of us, which is, you know, that's not a bad thing inherently. But it also fed into this feeling of, you know, God's adoption of us is this perfect thing. And you can't question something that's perfect. And so if that parallel was there for me, in which it was, I felt like I can't talk about this, because if I feel an issue, it's an issue with me, not with what may have happened during my adoption. So we're going to talk more about that rhetoric later, but that really impacted and shaped me as a child. And I didn't really start to unpack that until I went to college. And on move-in day, which like, yay, very busy day, I looked around and I was like, wow, other families are interacting differently than mine. And every family's different, so that most likely had literally nothing to do with the fact that I was adopted, just because families are different. But in my mind, it kind of triggered and started this exploration of like, well, why is my family different? Does this have anything to do with adoption? And so then being at college and having more kind of space to talk about this and ask questions about it without feeling like I was causing big problems for my family, just really started this, I guess, now 10-year process of digging more into it. And yeah, it's an ongoing journey, and fortunate to have met Aaron and be a part of this organization, Unfolding Adoptees, which are happy to talk about more. But it's so common for adoptees to not think about or process their adoption until they're adults, because you don't have the space to do it or the language. So that's a little bit of my story. So to start off, I'm going to read some quotes that are just like a representative sample of things that people in the church say about adoption, or whether it's just in general or to adoptees specifically. And we're not going to like unpack those conversationally right now, but it's just something to think about as we move through the rest of the discussion. So one quote came from a woman who works at an adoption agency who works with parents who are so eager, or prospective parents who are so eager to welcome a child into their home, which is a beautiful thing. And they're waiting and they're waiting, and they're just so eager to parent. And she said, I used to get 10 calls a month from prospective birth moms. Now I'm excited if I get one or two. Another quote that was from an adoptive parent who was able to adopt and welcome a child into her home said, for me, adoption was grief in reverse. And then a third, that's gonna make me cry. Okay, because that hits home, the unpacking of that hits home really hard for me. So another thing is just a really common thing adoptees hear, which is like, wow, you're so lucky to be adopted. How cool is that? Yeah, so those are just some representative samples. And this is, has an arm. So Aaron is gonna kind of transition us into the rest of the discussion here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those quotes, I think that many times we hear them and there's just, we just sort of agree with them internally. But I hope that as we go through, you might sort of just think about those, like, from the adoptee side. What Elizabeth and I have in common with our stories is that we've moved from sort of a simple to a complex understanding of adoption, and that's something that's really important, I think, to keep in mind. One of the areas that we feel like adoptees do have something to say that we wanted to start with is this issue of sort of the power imbalance that's inherent in adoption. And that's existent because almost by definition, any adoptee is a legal minor. There's absolutely no legal voice for them because they are underage, usually an infant. But that is, that power imbalance exists. That's something that has played out. And Elizabeth, would you mind just talking a little bit about some of the legal issues that adoptees are thinking through right now?
Yeah, so this is kind of niche, but I'm an attorney, and so I really like thinking about those legal issues. And we often think of adoption as this thing that happens as a child, and it happens. It's an event. You go to court. Everybody signs the papers. Great. And then oftentimes we do also think about the lifelong emotional or relational impact, but we very rarely think about the ongoing logistical or legal impacts that that has on adoptees throughout their entire lives. So a personal example was I found myself in a pretty intense health crisis as an adult, and my doctors were like, okay, there's basically two things this could be, and one of them has a very strong genetic component. And so can you find out whether this runs in your family? And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm adopted, so like, I don't really know. And they're like, well, you need to get this information. And so, well, I don't have it. So in the middle of this intense time, my parents went to the agency that I was adopted through, and they had my birth mother's current information. They had stayed in contact with her. It was a closed adoption. I don't know her, but they knew the information was current. And they reached out to her with, we have a yes or no question. We won't put, you know, we're not going to give your information other than the answer to this question to the family. Don't worry. We just need this yes or no answer. And she never got back to us. And they know she got it. And so that information wasn't available to me legally. Birth parents are not required to disclose any of that information. In some states, there are opportunities for them to disclose it before adoption or afterwards, but in every state law is different. But in many places, those are sealed records, which means you have to go to court. You can't just ask for them and pay a fee. Like, you gotta be an attorney, get an attorney, try to do it pro bono, whatever, file paperwork and turn up in court to try to get that information. And unfortunately, you don't have the time in many of these situations. And some other states, they're not sealed, but it's, you're only gonna get it if your birth parents gave it to the state at the time of adoption, and that's 100% to their discretion. And, you know, there are privacy interests that adoptive or birth parents have, and like, it's important that we take those seriously. But in the legislation that formed these laws, the privacy interests of the birth parent and the privacy interests of the adoptive parent were prioritized, and those are important, but the adoptee interest is nowhere in there. The recognition that these children can have emergencies where they need this information was not considered in these laws. And, you know, that's a pretty kind of niche example, but that power imbalance turns up in so many different ways that continue to impact adoptees throughout their entire life, not just at the moment of adoption. And this, similarly, there's a growing movement among adoptees to want access to their original birth certificates. And everyone in the U.S. can just ask, you know, file something with the state, pay a little fee, and get their birth certificate. And adoptees can't do that unless it's an open adoption. And again, there are privacy interests that are important and need to be considered. But again, the adoptee's interest is not considered. So those are just kind of some more logistical examples, and the church has an opportunity to be involved in just, you know, we're involved in legislative efforts and a lot of things, so why is this not something that we, the people who are interested, can also kind of step into? Yeah, so that's that.
In many ways, this is related, but also starts bridging towards some of the sort of Christian orphan-related topics. And all of us have had Orphan Sundays at church, where we talk about various initiatives. What is it like to be adoptee during one of these services or during a sermon about adoption?
Well, it's interesting to roll into a sermon that's supposed to be about, you know, you and your situation, and they're using orphan language, and so many adoptees are not literally orphans. And so it is biblical, you know, it's biblical language, you know, care for the orphan and the widow, and that's a wonderful impetus that the church has, or so many of us are not orphans. And language shapes the way we think, and it shapes the way we interact with the world, and the words we use matter. And the word orphan enables us and kind of creates this situation where we think of children in a vacuum. They're alone, they're floating through the world, totally unrelated to anyone else, they have no connections, which we, you know, when you stop and think about it, I think everybody would say, oh, well, that's not true. But that word itself kind of primes us to think about it in that way, and enables us as a church, or encourages people, whether they know it or not, to just kind of forget about the birth parent or forget about the birth culture and not try to account for that when we think about the adoptee or raise the adoptee just by the simple use of the word orphan. Adoptees are not people unattached to a birth family. They're not unattached from a birth culture. They have a history before coming to their adoptive family. And we need to be really careful, even when we use truly biblical language, to account for what impact that has on the way we actually act.
Interestingly, just one point to add, the Netherlands has actually recently banned adoption. They've halted their international adoption program because, prompted by adoptees, they investigated the adoption complex internationally. They were unable to conclude that the system was not sort of rife with multiple interests that were conflicting. They didn't have a good solution as one, you know, smaller country in the EU. And so they just decided to halt all international adoptions. It's something that did not get much press. I saw very little in the US about it. But I think that it's interesting that, you know, a developed, sophisticated country with a built-out legal system concluded that there was no way to ensure that, for instance, orphans are truly orphaned, that they weren't in some way sort of part of a family that could have taken care of them in their country of origin. So, the Netherlands. Yeah.
Yeah, so Aaron has thought so deeply and so much about other rhetoric that we use in the church about adoption. So he's going to walk us through some of that.
Well, this is really, I think, where Elizabeth and I, like, we really have a heart both for caring for other adoptees, but also really for just trying to, like I said, encourage this conversation about how do we as Christians in the church talk about adoption. The verse that, or one of the verses that is almost always quoted, and I was looking at a John Piper sermon a few days ago just to kind of, I feel like he's kind of representative of evangelical sermons about this, but Galatians 4:4-7, but when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his son, born of woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. Because you are sons, God has sent the spirit of his son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God. And I think that this is usually one of the key texts that pastors use to teach about adoption. If not explicitly, this is a connection to an application. And usually the emphasis is about how beautiful adoption is, how costly it is for the parents. The emphasis is on the act of grace that the parents show towards the child. And usually if they're a PCA church or a little bit more theologically focused, it's about the legal implications, right? We're now heirs of God and we've been given the rights as sons. I have no problem with the theology of adoption, right? Like I am 100% on board with this and believe that that is absolutely true. My question is, how does that apply to human adoption? And how do we draw that parallel? And what are the implications of that? If you think about this, if you think about sort of the parallels, if we're saying that adoption is, as Christians, salvation and rescue from sin, right? And then you try to parallel that to adoption of orphans, of humans, where is the sin in this? The sin is the birth family, right? Or the country of origin. Who's saving us? It's the adoptive parents. Right? They're the ones who are coming in and rescuing the baby from this life of sin, right? That is, in the scripture, categorically not right and bad. It's just a very sort of messy comparison, but one that feels right if you don't sort of think about, okay, so as an adoptee, like, what am I supposed to do with this, right? Like, was it really that bad where I came from? And how am I supposed to put these pieces together? I think that there's a few challenges with drawing this parallel. One is that I think one I think is like a little bit more commonly dealt with these days. I feel like a lot of people have recognized some of the breakdown. But the whole savior complex, you know, adoptive parents have become very sort of attuned to the fact that as an adoptive parent, I don't want to be seen as like a savior. Like I'm not the one who's swooping in and like the giver of all good things to this child, right? At the same time, I think the way we as a church talk about this, it can attract people who are interested in that. There was a fairly high-profile social media personality who adopted a child and then gave the child back because they no longer wanted it. I don't want to like overly pass judgment here, but at the same time, it's really hard to. I've talked to so many adoptive parents who are like, I thought I was doing a good thing, and this is a lot harder than I thought. But the implication kind of being like it was almost about me and my social standing within my church. I think the second thing that's a little bit challenging and not necessarily related to this text, but I think that sort of worked its way into the way we as Christians think about this is. I think that the prosperity gospel has creeped into our understanding of what's good and right for orphans and children, especially with international adoption, but also with domestic adoption. It's really difficult to separate the conversation about access to healthcare, access to education, and sort of the relative merits of the U.S. versus an African country or an Asian country or an urban city center, you know? Underlying a lot of this discussion is often, oh, well, obviously, like, we're able to provide a much better place, but what we really mean is we're actually able to offer better access to healthcare, access to better education, really fundamentally the things that we as sort of affluent North Americans value. What's not in the mix is family relations, you know, like biological family, like access to culture of origin. That's not included at all. And so I think that there's a piece of the prosperity gospel that has kind of worked its way in to the way we Christians in America have approached adoption and justify it. And it's something that I think is adoptees. It just feels missing, right? Like, I think that what Elizabeth and I want to be careful about with this is not to pass judgment on any of our sort of individual choices with our families or, you know. It feels like the conversation has been very unbalanced in churches. Adoption is good, adoption is right, and that's kind of where it ends. I think where we've missed is sort of the messiness of this. The third piece, I think, and this is related to the Galatians verse a little bit more directly, when we talk about adoption as beautiful, what we really do often is cut it off from our origin story. We really focus on the beauty of from adoption forward, and we really miss out on the messiness of what we've lost. And as Elizabeth has pointed out, I think that one of the results is that many adoptees feel pressured into gratitude, right? Like, I must be grateful. I think every adoptee has often been faced with that you're so lucky, isn't that great? Your parents are so wonderful. Isn't it so great that you're in the U.S.? I've gotten so many questions or so many comments that are just kind of like, you just kind of, like, I'm a pretty easygoing person, so I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess, sure. You just hear these things, and you're like, oh, okay, well. But I think that as Christians, though, and this is really coming back to why we wanted to have this session, as Christians, I think that we lead a lot of the conversations surrounding adoption. You know, our theology matters, because this is what's taught to vast swaths of American culture, right? And so we as Christians are trendsetters in many ways. We lead the conversation, and as Elizabeth pointed out, the language we use, the way we teach about this matters. And so this is something that I think that we have to work on, and also someplace where we have a lot of influence. So I'll stop there. Actually, no, I had one more thing I wanted to say. The reason why I feel so passionately about this is not quite so abstract. When I started going through my little awakening a few years ago, I joined an adoptee group in New York City. It was really hard to be a part of this group in many ways because I had never been around so many adoptees. We were all Korean, and so that was really unusual. When they told their stories, you could just kind of read between the lines. Almost all of them were Holt kids. Holt is a major Christian adoption agency. Almost all of them were adopted into families in the Midwest. If you read between the lines, almost all of them were from Christian families and very strongly Christian families. And almost all of them, I think I have one out of like 100 was still Christian. Most of them spoke very disparagingly towards the church, very disparagingly towards even their family. And had very, very clearly walked away from their faith in large part because of the way this narrative had been spun about adoption. They sort of have been taught for many years adoption is good, right, and beautiful. As they grew up and sort of faced this coming out of the fog scenario, they were unable to justify these pieces internally. And that caused a crisis of faith, and for these individuals, they just walked away. Like I said, like, this is a very specific subsection of the population. I don't mean to say that's everybody, but that is part of why I feel so passionately about this. Anyway, that's why I just tried. We've said a lot about things that we feel like adoptees have to add and ways in which we feel things should change. But we did want to have some comments about organizations that we feel like are doing well, or at least like the types of things that we believe Christian organizations have made progress on. And Elizabeth, maybe you could just sort of talk a little bit about framing this.
Yeah, so I'm not going to do a lot of naming of specific organizations, not because organizations aren't doing great work, but because there are just so many areas in which there needs to be growth, but we never want to leave a conversation with, well, go figure it out, have fun out there. Best of luck to everyone. Like, we have specific thoughts on how organizations somewhat simply can improve this. And I think it starts with the understanding that adoption is born out of pain. We're in a fallen world, and the only reason adoption exists is because the world is broken. And this is maybe a little bit of a side tangent, but it's going to come back together, I promise. My husband, who is also adopted, and I are on the leadership team of an adoption and foster care group at our church, and it is a group of people who love the Lord so dearly and who pour their lives into foster care and adoption and who think about this a lot more carefully and deeply than many, many people in the church do. But there was a situation on a call where, you know, we were kind of going around sharing prayer requests as a good Christian church group does. And one couple who was, you know, having infertility problems and desperately wanted a child. And there is, in no universe is that a bad desire. But they were talking about how we're so frustrated by how long we're having to wait. We just really want a child. This is so hard to wait. And they said, like, well, our agency told us that the reason we're having to wait so long is because due to COVID, fewer teenage girls are becoming pregnant. And like, oh gosh, now we're having to wait. And that's like kind of extreme, but people in the group, you know, oh, just nodding and wow, I you know that's really hard. We'll be praying for you that you're able to welcome a child into your home. And these are people who think so carefully about it, but it just reflects this just disconnect from the understanding that if a child is available for adoption, something has gone wrong. And in the church, we can just get so excited about adoption that we just forget that if we do this, it's because people are suffering. And so that understanding needs to be kind of recentered. And I think that's kind of the groundwork for a lot of ways that the church can improve. And one of those ways is literally just to think more about the biological family or the biological community, and to do what I like to call upstream care, to intercede and love and care on families before the child is even in a situation where they need to be adopted. And I'm also on the board of an organization that sees a ton of applications for prospective parents who are eager to adopt, and the stories are just so hard. And it's a good reminder of there will always be children who need, all caps, to be adopted. But there are so many children who don't. There was an example of a video that kind of went around that was a very, you know, framed as this really positive story of how brave is this birth mother, how wonderful is this, where she said, I really wanted to parent, but I just didn't have the resources. And it's like, oh my goodness gracious. Like, here is a mother who really wants to parent, and the limit is finances? And so this is an opportunity for the church to just pour into adoptive family or birth families, communities. Because when parents flourish, the children flourish. And there's a loss when a child is adopted. And so as a church, we should be investing in these, in mothers and fathers, but often it's just the mother, in the way that we would for a daughter or a sister. If they need help, help. You don't be like, well, good luck out there. You know, have fun. You come around them, you help with housing, you help with school, you help with whatever, because you want their you want that woman to flourish and her child to flourish. And so There is one specific organization, you know, no organization is perfect, but it's an organization called Safe Families, and it partners with churches to be there for families who are almost about to maybe head the direction of having their children removed from the home. And many times that's because a parent is struggling with addiction or homelessness or these things that we as a church can change before it gets to that point. Like a family in this program, a family can do short-term housing for a child while their parent's going to rehab, help with babysitting while the parent is going to their college classes, helping them find apartments, write resumes, these very simple things that helps the family flourish so the child isn't removed and that trauma doesn't happen. And internationally, that looks like a lot of other agencies and groups that aren't even adoption focused, but that are pouring into communities. Because like I said, when parents and communities flourish, their children are less likely to be in a situation where they find themselves needing to be adopted. And so organizations like we heard about last night with clean water or economic opportunities for communities, those are the type of things, even if they're not talking specifically about adoption, that can impact adoption even before it happens. So those are some of the examples. Again, I didn't really give great specific examples, but.
Yeah. No, I think we're both big believers, though, in the idea of caring for families most and really trying to think about what's the relative merits of directing resources towards adoption and towards care of families, right? And I think that in many cases, it's been skewed towards helping parents adopt, which is great in some circumstances and perfectly inappropriate in others. And so how are we just thinking about this? And how do we provide balance here, right? There's always going to be circumstances for both. Let's try to shift a little bit and think a little bit more about the other side of the equation. Once again, this is also where I think the prosperity gospel has come in. You know, we just don't. This mother can't care for this child like I could, or like this other family that I know could. You know, and it's like, well, they might have a very different life. You know, and it might not be ideal, and maybe they're not going to go to Harvard. You know, and that's okay. Like, we don't get to define what's best for them in every case. You know, we have a perspective. Let's think carefully about the way, like the lens through which we're viewing this particular family situation. How do we best help them where they are, knowing that maybe they're not going to do everything perfectly like we think they should, et cetera, et cetera. And that's also okay because we're also imperfect people. We have about 4 or 5 minutes now for questions. And I would say Elizabeth and I are happy to talk to any of you throughout the weekend. So, you know, we don't have to limit to this.
Things I can say, but so do you. So
we don't represent everybody. That's always sort of the caveat here. My answer to this, I think more recently, has been that I don't think that there's a way to do something to fix it. I think that there's a lot that is just, like, as a person, you just have to work through some of the challenges that come with sort of being alive as a person. And as an adoptee, I think that some of the things that you have to wrestle through are just sort of a fact of life. I think that oftentimes as parents, we want to come up with the best way to sort of fix the problem that our kids might face. And I really would say with this one, I'm not sure that there is. Like, I thought I was fine. Like, I thought I was fine, and then all of a sudden it just kind of hit me out of nowhere. And so it's super common to sort of deal with these when the triggers I've heard have been the death of a adoptive parent often triggers reflection. Becoming a parent often triggers reflection. There's these sort of like life milestones that, and just a lot of adoptees when they're in their sort of late 20s, early 30s, oftentimes start, but it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, Aaron, are we allowed to ask how your relationship is with your parents today, and how did you work through it?
It's a really positive relationship. I tread very carefully on this topic with them. I didn't tell them that I was doing anything related to adoption until about last year. And I felt very sort of protective of them and their feelings and didn't want to be sort of hurtful. And so the reason I told them was because I actually did a podcast. And it was going to go out, and I was like, I should probably tell my parents about this before. they know now, and it's been positive. It's just, you know, working through that.
Yeah.
And one thing I would add in response to your question, I completely agree with Aaron that there's like no silver bullet for this. But I do know a family who is adopted who, what they do is they just push back on the church's narrative. Like when someone walks up to them and is like, wow, how cool, this is so great, they kind of just push back on that. Well, no, you know, this is difficult for, you know, there's different levels of what you feel comfortable sharing with people, but just kind of saying the things that we talked about today of reminding people that, like, no, we're not heroes, adoption's really complicated, you know, we're so grateful to, you know, be able to love on this child, but it's not, you know, we didn't save them, you know, kind of simple language that a lot of people just don't think about. And your child grows up hearing that, like how your parents talk about adoption. Even if you hear more negative things and harmful things from other people, parents have such a big influence on their children, and just hearing the parent like push back on that narrative, I know that this couple's children are having a kind of different experience than many adoptees do, because they know their parents are kind of pushing on that church narrative, going to bat for them. Yeah, so I don't have like, this is the phrase you use, but yeah, wow, we talked a lot longer than we thought we were going to. Not as much time for questions, but I, yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing all of your work. And I have a question about a couple of phrases that I've heard, and I just don't know what to think about. And one of them is people will say to us about our daughter, oh, she adopted you. Hmm. She adopted you. And I thought, oh, that's a really sweet thing that she's taken us into her heart. And, but I also don't know like how that really would sit with her. And then another one is a lot of people have told me that but then I've also heard, well, that might not feel good to her because she might feel like, well, I didn't get to choose you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As far as the I chose you language, I grew up hearing that as well. And at least for me, it kind of also played into that need to, well, don't talk about adoption, don't rock the boat, because my parents chose me, so that must mean that I have to be really good. I don't want to disappoint them for that. And then as far as the, you know, she adopted you, there's quite a bit of language similarly when people use like, oh, well, we're all adopted by God. It just kind of brushes over the particular experience that an adoptee has as an adoptee. That hurt is there for her in a way that it's probably, you know, it's not the same as the difficulties you might face as an adoptive parent. And so when we kind of try to say that, you know, compare the adoptee's experience to something else or kind of brush over it, it just does the similar thing of like, kind of ignore the specific things that adoptees face as adoptees. And that's probably not a great answer, but that's what came to mind.
You touched on the topic of foster care. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we could segue into a little bit of that. Our foundation is involved in anti-trafficking. Mm-hmm. And what we found out is that women who are trafficked, 60% of them have a background in foster care, and the mm-hmm. foster care program is totally broken. Mm-hmm. Can you comment?
I agree. I'm not an expert in foster care.
I don't really feel comfortable, honestly, because I don't know very much about the foster care system. But I would say that I think that our comments about upstream care apply just as much there. What are the circumstances that cause the children to be in foster care? And how do we as a church not deal only with the foster care system itself, but the broader cultural circumstances that put kids there? But I don't have any very specific things to add.
Sorry.
There was an article just yesterday, or an op-ed, by an individual who went through the foster system and through a number of group homes. And he was specifically advocating for more of kinship care. Apparently, he was placed through numerous homes and group homes. And he had living family who had actually fostered and adopted other relatives 90 miles away from his home. The agencies had never bothered to ask or even look. And so he said that even a cursory search would have turned up these other families who were absolutely willing and able to take him in. So just something to